You're listening to the Locked On Nuggets podcast, your daily podcast on the Denver Nuggets. Now, here is your host from DenverStiffs.com, Adam Mottis.
What is up, everybody? Welcome to the Locked On Nuggets podcast, part of the Locked On NBA Network. I'm your host, Adam Mottis from DenverStiffs.com, the largest Denver Nuggets blog and community on the web. Check us out. Follow us on Facebook, Instagram, Twitter, and YouTube. Today's episode of the show is going to be on the game against the Philadelphia 76ers. I know it was all the way back on, Friday? So it's a couple days old, but there's a lot of good stuff in there. And so I wanted to go over that. It's going to be sections 1 and 2 of today's show are going to be on that. In section 3, just kind of a news and notes. There was a lot that happened. The trade deadline, well, nothing happened, but we're going to talk about what it means that nothing happened. Isaiah Thomas appears to be, for real this time, approaching his debut with the Nuggets. So that becomes a little bit newsworthy. And then, of course, Nikola Jokic was selected by Team Giannis. I want to talk about that in the third section as well. Some news and notes, loose news and notes in that last section. But before we get to it, guys, I am actually really excited now for this live show that we're going to be doing on Sunday. The All-Star Game, of course, is this upcoming Sunday, the 17th, at 4:30 at Society Bar and Grill in downtown Denver. I'm going to be hosting the first ever live show with Mark Coulomb, who's one of my favorite guests, hilarious guy, Eric Wiedem, who is D-Line Co., the brain trust behind D-Line Co., and then, of course, you know Brendan Vogt from Denver Stiffs. A great panel, and just to give you an idea of what this is going to be an interactive live show, so it's live. We're going to be, you know, having some drinks, having a good time, getting ready for the game, some fun topics, but it's also going to include the audience. So if you're in town and you want to participate, come show up. You'll be on the show. You will be there. There's going to be certain little bits and gimmicks that we do that involve, you know, calling people out of the audience. We're going to have a microphone set up for a Q&A section. So it'll just be a lot of fun. I can't wait. It's going to be one of the best episodes ever, and I think it's going to be a really good time. And what's nice about it is it leads right into the All-Star Game, so then we'll all hang out together and watch the game together. I can't wait to catch up with everyone and just talk Nuggets. It should be a good time. Hopefully the Nuggets come into that on a two-game winning streak. This little losing streak, I think, has fans a little nervous. I can always sort of take the temperature of Nuggets fans based on what types of things people are writing me on Twitter, and I think 3-game losing streak, people are starting to get nervous. So we'll talk about how nervous or not nervous I am, you know, towards the in that segment 3 here. Let's get to this game with the 76ers. Really fun game. We have not seen a lot of Jokic versus Embiid. All told, I think it's like 60 minutes against each other, something like that, over the 4 years. So we just haven't got a lot of it. So it was kind of fun to get it. I was very curious to see how Jokic did. And I thought he did really well. The one thing I would say, I think both players have a sort of healthy respect for each other. Embiid's a trash talker. He likes to let guys know, oh, he's not as good as me, this or that. He's never said that about Jokic. And I think part of it is, you know, they're such different players. Even though they both play the center position, they're just completely different in the way that they approach that position. And I think that Embiid kind of knows, no, this is a guy, this is a nut I haven't cracked yet. This guy I haven't quite figured out. And I think for Jokic, sort of the same thing. Jokic is a player who I think the more he plays against guys, the more he sort of gets a read on how to attack them and what to do. And I think Embiid, since they've barely played, he's probably still figuring out. I even thought the second half of this game, Jokic started to do some things that maybe he got a read on Embiid and started to attack him, so he was much better. So it was an interesting game. Really, really, really fun to kind of watch those two go at it. Denver, the first 3 minutes of this game, the offense was pretty clunky. They went with the lineup again that I really, really like, Malik Beasley in there. They got, I thought, some really decent looks and just couldn't knock them down. Jokic in particular, I talked about both him and Embiid being nervous. I thought Jokic missed a couple of shots, a couple of passes early on that you could tell Embiid was sort of psyching him out a little bit. So he left a jump hook short that he usually makes, and then just some passes that went off his fingertips a little bit weirdly. The 76ers, and Embiid in particular, the Jokic-Murray pick and roll, Embiid was dropping deep in the paint and just allowing Jamal Murray to shoot that pull-up. And it's a mid-range pull-up, but Jamal Murray has to be able to hit that shot just at when you have a wide-open walk into the free-throw line elbow jumper, you have to be able to knock it down. And Murray took one, and he was off, I think, to the right. Like, it was a bad miss. And it's one of those things. You watch Damian Lillard and you watch Steph Curry play, and of course these are all-stars, like some of the best scoring guards in all the NBA, so it's not fair to compare Murray. It's more about where can he get to. But teams don't do – that's a death sentence. If you just say, oh, Steph Curry, go ahead, shoot the mid-range pull-up, like Curry will go for 100 points because he'll knock that one down every time. I think Murray, you know, he's coming back from injury, so I think there's a lot of just rust with him. In fact, in the fourth quarter, we're going to talk about that a lot more. But he needs to be a guy that he quickly recognizes, oh, they're going to give me that. That's a death sentence. You want to make sure that the defense is always forced to play up on the screen. And unfortunately, early on, he just wasn't taking it or was missing on those. Will Barton, clearly not healthy, and it's starting to worry me a little bit, kind of like Millsap last year. You know, they both missed roughly the same amount of time, a little bit more than half the season, and Millsap, when he came back, was not the same player. I mean, we saw Millsap at the start of this year and just how good he was, especially defensively, and then he gets hurt and you see like he's lost something. I think with Will Barton, there was a couple of plays. I might do a short write-up on Denver Stiffs with some of these video. I have the video on my computer just ready to be uploaded. But there was this one play in the first quarter. He attacks the basket. Nobody picks him up. He's wide. It's a wide open drive to the basket, and he just doesn't get any lift under him. He goes for the layup instead of the dunk, even though nobody checked him, and even the way he laid it up was just so weak and soft. And Will Barton was in the dunk contest, 3 years ago? I mean, he's an athletic dude. He could get up. But clearly, whether it's mental, physical, or some combination of both, he just doesn't have any more pop in his jump. And Embiid comes over and blocks his shot in that first quarter, but it should have never been even close to being blocked. It's just Barton just doesn't have a lot of lift. And it wasn't the only play. There was a couple of them. So I'm starting to get worried. You know, Barton, I think the Nuggets, one of the stories is they clearly need the All-Star break to arrive so they can all just sort of take a week off and get their bodies back. But Will Barton is, I'm certainly looking at him and just thinking, at any point this year, is he going to get that ability to attack the rim like he was at the start of the season? I certainly hope so. J.J. Redick is a Denver Nuggets killer. It seems like that guy always has big games against the Nuggets. And if you look at, a lot of people have been like throwing me out theories about why Denver lost. It's obvious, 34 points from J.J. Redick. He was 11 for 15 from the field. He was 6 of 7 from the three-point line. I mean, Denver played a very good game against an amped-up, very good 76ers team in their building on the fourth game of a long road trip, and they would have won had it not been for J.J. Redick having probably his best game of the season. So J.J. Redick, part of this is, you know, Denver, I think, just is so bad at closing out at the three-point line for whatever reason, and part of this is Redick just got hot early. I think they let him get comfortable, and when you do that, you lend yourself to giving up 34 points from him. Will Barton, I think defensively, and Malik Beasley, both of those, and Jamal Murray, actually, all three of them, really, really bad defensively in this game, and especially on the perimeter, and that, more than anything, is why Denver lost. Trey Lyles as the back line of rotation. One of the reasons I just don't think he should be a long-term piece for the Denver Nuggets is, you know, Jokic, for all of the things he can do well on the defensive end, you still need to have a back line defender at your power forward position who is physically capable and also just willing to put his body in harm's way to prevent the easy layups. There's a play, and again, this is, if I do a short write-up on Denver Stiffs, this is one of the things I'll put. Boban, you know, Jokic comes up to the level of screen. They get the ball to Boban, who's rolling to the basket. Trey Lyles, it's Boban, the slowest guy in all of the NBA, slower than Nikola Jokic. And Trey Lyles is the help guy, and he rotates over, and he's, I don't know, a half second late from getting to Boban? Boban! And he's not in the way, and Boban ends up getting a layup. It was like Boban was in the game for 30 seconds. He gets a layup, and it was off of Trey Lyles not being able to outquick Boban Marjanovic. And it's just one of those plays that you look at, you go, man, what if you can't get in position to stop the slowest rolling, lumbering guy in all of the NBA, then what can you do? And it was a really, really frustrating play. It renders him almost unplayable most of the time. And I've talked a lot about Lyles' fit offensively next to Jokic and why I think it's not ideal. But if he was a great defender, I mean, Millsap, I think, offensively is not ideal next to Jokic, but he's so good defensively. Well, unfortunately, with Lyles, you kind of get the worst of both worlds in that front court pairing with Jokic. I thought the 76ers' length was a real problem for the Nuggets, and this is both a thing that Philadelphia on purpose has built a very, very, very long roster. I mean, Ben Simmons is your point guard at 6'10", my goodness. And then you have Tobias Harris. One of the reasons they brought him in is that they're so switchable. You can switch 1 through 5 with certain lineups. So they have all these guys that are a threat. But and then Denver on the flip side is very small. It's weird because Jamal Murray and Gary Harris and Malik Beasley, like these, that would be considered a tall backcourt, you know, 15 years ago. But nowadays, with how much you have to be able to switch and just how much length there is, I think that Denver struggles against teams like this. And in particular, guys like, you know, some of the guards struggle with some of the length. So that was, as we get into the playoffs, that's one of the things I look at is I wonder how much do teams just sort of overwhelm Denver physically, not so much with their strength, but just with their length. Are they able to bottle up Denver? That's one of the things that's great about the playoffs is you learn things like this about your team. The Nuggets fought to stay in this game in the first quarter, started to get away from them. The 76ers, they started slow, but then they started getting out in transition. And if today we had our first practice with the Nuggets in a long time and got to talk, and at practice you get a little bit more of a candid and I think thoughtful Michael Malone after before games. You know, he's so focused on the game, but after practices he can really sort of point to some of the stuff that him and his coaching staff have been focused on. And transition defenses was one of the first things. When they asked why has the defense slipped, he said, well, he starts with transition. Transition. And I agree. The Nuggets, in a lot of these games where they have given up big leads or when they've given up big runs, it's been transition. And some of that is bad shot selection. But a lot of that is just that Denver, for whatever reason, has given up a lot of just early, you know, early shot clock, easy looks, and they just have not sprinted back and found their guy in transition. That needs to be a priority because, you know, so much of a team's rhythm happens in the transition. And when you look at first quarter defensive rating, Denver giving up a ton of points, you can give up, you know, you could have a bad offensive rating, not get stops, but still not only give up 25, 27 points. But when you're giving up fast breaks and teams are getting, you know, 8 second possessions and then they score, that's when you really put yourself in bad position. And that happened in this first quarter. Philadelphia was getting out in the open court and scoring really, really quickly. The inbound that Torrey Craig gave up, there's 35 seconds left in the game and they have the ball on their end of the floor. They have to go the full length of the floor. They inbound it because Torrey Craig's falling asleep. Jokic does this a lot, right? He throws that inbound pass. He sneaks, rushes the inbound pass all the way full court. Well, that happened to the Nuggets. They get it to J.J. Redick. Torrey Craig's sleeping. He ends up, you know, shot fake. Torrey Craig flies by, and then J.J. Redick gets a wide open three. Not only was that bad because it gave up a three, but it also gave the 76ers a 2-for-1. Denver comes down and does not score. 76ers go down and they convert at the buzzer a putback dunk. Monte Morris failed to box out his guy, so he gives up a putback dunk. So the Nuggets go from being down 5 with 35 seconds left to down 10 going into the quarter. Again, J.J. Redick is the reason they lost, and that stretch, 5 points, that little stretch, that mental lapse is why Denver lost. So plays like that, I think, are very frustrating for Michael Malone and sort of indicate just where this team is, I think, mentally as they're trying to bounce back from the slump that they're in. I want to talk more about this game, but before we do, I want to talk about an ADU. I want to tell you about ADUs, accessory dwelling units. This is a white hot Denver housing market. There is need for more rental units, Airbnbs, and most of all, housing for family members. So instead of paying more money for a larger home in a different neighborhood, you can affordably add an ADU, an accessory dwelling unit, to your current home and take advantage of the booming Colorado market. Lots of people are getting into this. There's several different types of ADUs, tiny homes, container homes, foundation or stick builds, converted walkout basements, mother-in-law apartments. If you live in Denver, Lakewood, Arvada, Golden, Castle Rock, unincorporated Jefferson County, Inglewood, or Colorado Springs, your house might be zoned for an ADU. By adding an ADU to your home, you can increase your home value, provide housing for aging family members, monthly rental income. You can allow a space for your adult children. It's more and more common for adult children to stay in the home for longer. This is a great opportunity for you to create a section of your house that's together but separate for that. And that's why I want to tell you about financemyadu.com. You can give them a call at 720-650-1081. They'll put you in touch with experts that can get you the help you need every step of the way to finance your own addition to your home or convert a room in your house that you already have into an ADU. So again, that's financemyadu.com or give them a call, 720-650-1081. So the Nuggets fall behind by 10 going into the second quarter, despite playing what I thought, you know, somewhat decently other than that transition stretch, but, you know, you end the quarter so poorly. Will Barton opened up the second quarter with four straight points, and so Denver goes from down 10 to down 6, and to me, there's these little moments, these little checkpoints around any given game where things can get out of hand or a team can start a rally back, and I thought his 2 points were largely, you know, tough buckets, as he self-created type shots, and I thought it was like a breath of fresh air. I was like, okay, good. Denver almost had this thing out of reach, and they're right back in it. Juancho Hernangómez shot an off-the-dribble mid-range pull-up jumper, and I don't think I had ever seen him do that before. In fact, when he did it, like, I know I hadn't, because you notice little details about how a player shoots in different, you know, situations, and I'm pretty sure I had never seen him shoot that exact shot, so kind of an interesting little thing from him. I've talked about how much Denver tries to post up Trey Lyles and how, especially against better defenders, Damari Carroll the other day, Jimmy Butler now, he can be a little too obvious. He's too slow, and he's too obvious when he's putting the ball down, so these quicker guys kind of time him and then get the turnover, and of course that happened in this example I'm talking about. Murray and Barton got going in the second, and so did Jokic. Will Barton had 10 points, Jokic had 10 points, Jamal Murray 7. Both Barton and Jokic had 10, 3, and 3 in that second quarter. And Will Barton actually had two assists, one that became a foul, so it didn't count as an assist, and another one he gave to Mason Plumlee right under the basket, and Plumlee kicked it out. Joel Embiid, one of the things that is so impactful about him is he blocks a lot of shots, but he also just discourages people from taking wide open shots because they're afraid of him. And that happened to the Nuggets a lot. But this play, I was the weirdest one because Mason Plumlee was wide open under the basket. Barton gave him a beautiful feed, drew the defense out and dropped it off to him. And he just, for whatever reason, like panicked and didn't shoot it. So I thought those three guys, Murray, Barton, and Jokic, that second quarter to me, when especially that second quarter comeback, remember Denver rallied back over the last like 6 minutes. To me, that when I talk about why I'm excited for Barton in the starting lineup alongside Jamal Murray, that was why. There was just so much. It brings out some of the best in Jokic to have two ball handlers in the pick and roll, like elite level ball handlers, and that was a good example of it. All three of those guys were in a very good rhythm in that second quarter, and their offense, even against a very, very good defensive team in Philadelphia, their offense was humming. And they outscore the quarter 33-23. 33 points on that Philadelphia team is a really, really, you know, that's a good performance. And that second quarter was kind of what I was looking, what I expected in the offseason when I talked about that lineup. J.J. Redick just kept hitting contested shots. This is why I talk about, with a guy like him in particular, such a rhythm shooter, you don't defend him in the first quarter, then he gets going, and then there's just no defending him. And that's what I thought happened. Redick got some great looks, wide open looks, some in transition, some in the half court in the first quarter, and then he just started hitting, you know, disgusting contested fall-away jumpers. Denver, hand in the face, defended it perfectly, and he just kept knocking him down. And that's why that first quarter is so important to set the tone. But the Nuggets did, like I said, rallied back and they tied this game at the half, and it was an impressive comeback. In the second half, I mentioned earlier, I thought Jokic started to come to life a little bit more in his one-on-one battle with Jokic. I thought defensively he did a great job guarding Joel Embiid. So Jokic, a bad defender in space. He's better this year than he was last year for sure. But still, that spread pick and roll out on an island, he's slow afoot. Inside, as a one-on-one post defender, I actually think Jokic is really good. In fact, I think he might be better than Mason Plumlee. No might about it. I think he is better than Mason Plumlee as a interior one-on-one post defender. Mason Plumlee a much better in most facets of defense. But just if you were to tell me, okay, Embiid's not going to pass, he's going to go one-on-one in the block in the post. Who do you want guarding him? Millsap, Jokic, or Plumlee? I would go with Jokic. I just think he's a very, very good on-ball defender. He doesn't fall for fakes. He's crafty. He knows how to get guys to take just a little bit of a difficult, make every shot they take just a little bit more difficult. And, you know, look, Joel Embiid, he was sick, so there was a little bit of that, but he was 4 of 17 in this game. And I thought a lot of that had to do with when Jokic was guarding him, he did a very good job of forcing him away. I put this on Twitter. I loved how the Nuggets used Trey Lyles to bring the ball up for an entry pass on a play out of an after timeout play, also known as an ATO. He brings the ball up as the point forward, which they don't do very often. They don't allow him to do this. But what I like about it, and again, when I talk about Denver struggled with length, they were struggling to get the ball to Jokic inside because the long-armed, long-limbed defenders on Philadelphia were bottling up Denver's backcourt. So they give it to Lyles, who did a great job of showing the ball up top before giving a nice bounce pass into Jokic in the middle of the court. He gives a nice little old man move to do a scoop under Boban. And that was a great ATO. It was neat to see Lyles used as the initiator. I know that there's some risk there because Lyles isn't always strong with the ball, but he does have the size. And for whatever reason, big guys just seem to be better than guards in today's NBA at throwing the entry pass. I don't know what it is. Will Barton, I thought, had some great passes in the pick and roll. Guys, I've mentioned this before. I'm now blocking and muting people on Twitter when you throw like the Will Barton conspiracies or, you know, just complain to me about Will Barton. Two nights ago against Detroit and against Brooklyn, I talked about on the show, worst games of the year. He was the worst player on the court. He was really, really bad. Like, when he is bad, I go all in about it just like I do every other player. But I thought in this Philadelphia game, he was great. He had a couple egregious, you know, like one or two really bad plays that stuck out on the low light reel. But I thought for most of the night, he was very, very good. And Denver would not have been in that game without him. 14 points, 8 rebounds, 7 assists. I mean, that's pretty darn good for a secondary playmaker. And in that fourth quarter, he made some really, really high-level reads in the pick and roll to keep Denver in it. One big possession in this game, I talk about these pivot points. Jokic misses an elbow jumper. His shot was just not that great. Jokic's wasn't from outside. He misses an elbow jumper. Tobias Harris goes the other way and hits a transition three. That was a five-point swing with 6 minutes to go, and it was at a point where Denver could have, you know, taken the lead late and put the pressure on Philadelphia, but instead it goes the other way. But then immediately following that, Jokic scores on back-to-back possessions, including the most exciting, 12 seconds in sports, the Nikola Jokic fast break. He gets the steal and goes coast-to-coast. He has this thing he does on some of these coast-to-coast when a guy's chasing him where he sprints and then, like, goes into slow motion. It's so funny. The defender, I think it was Ben Simmons, goes flying by him because Jokic was too slow. Like, Jokic beats people off of how slow he is sometimes. It's kind of hilarious. So Denver, those back-to-back buckets by Jok cut the game to 103-103, tie game with 4 minutes to go. But that last 4 minutes were really, really ugly. And, you know, the Nuggets have been one of the best teams in the clutch this season. And we know from looking at the clutch time data over decades that, you know, clutch, there are teams that are better and worse in the clutch, but often that's really, really noisy. The more there's only a few possessions in a game, if you say, oh, this team is really good in the final 3 minutes of a game, there's not that many possessions, so there's a big opportunity for variance and variation. So Denver has been elite late in games, but I don't know that that means it's because Denver is elite or if it just means Denver has run a little bit lucky. I think it's a little bit of both. When Jokic and Murray were closing out game after game with their great two-man game, I think that, you know, obviously there's some luck involved because they made shots, and we know they don't shoot 100% on those shots, so the fact that they went in, we know there's some luck there. But I think they just had developed a nice chemistry and a nice rhythm, and they're both very, very good players, so they kind of knew how to close out games. Murray has now been out for a while. He's back in the lineup for a couple games. I thought he was completely out of rhythm in the final 4 or 5 minutes. And again, part of this was the length that they were able to put on him to make things a little bit more difficult. He airballed a step-back jumper, again, contested by a very tall defender. But more than anything, I thought Jamal Murray over-dribbled way too much in this game. And Michael Malone, after the game, he didn't call anybody out, but he said, I thought we over-dribbled in this one. And when I was watching live, I did watch this game two times, but this was one of the notes I had on the first watch was Jamal Murray really over-dribbled down the stretch, and it killed Denver. It took him away. They had opportunities to run that two-man game, but, you know, I talked about this earlier in the season. Murray was very gun-shy about delivering that pass on the roll to Jokic because he didn't want to turn it over. Well, I thought in the close of this game, he looked more like he did at the start of the year where he was over-dribbling, and I don't know if that was because he was trying to get his own shot or if it was because he didn't feel confident enough in himself against longer defenders to deliver that pass. But for whatever reason, whether it was selfishness or trying to play conservatively, either way, it killed Denver down the stretch, and they just couldn't get buckets. And then lastly, there was one play that sticks out, and Malone referenced this one as well. It's called it the backbreaker. Malik Beasley, Mason Plumlee guarding the pick and roll. Ben Simmons is the ball handler. Ben Simmons gives the slightest freeze move, hesitation move, and both guys released Ben Simmons and try to go to the kickout guy. This happens because of a lack of communication. This is 100% one of those things, especially this was like a minute and a half left to go. Denver, I think, was down maybe four or five at the I think they were down four. The dunk gave it six, and there was and one opportunity to push it to seven. So you're talking about a minute left, down four. You can come back from that. A minute down seven, it's pretty much over. So this was the biggest play of the game. You would think if ever there was a chance to communicate with each other, that would be it. But because it's not a habit for Denver, they didn't do it in that moment. And in the biggest moment of the game, you end up not just giving up a wide open dunk, but an and one dunk. And that was a killer. Beasley for his grade, I've seen a lot of people hitting me up saying, oh, Beasley's better than Gary Harris. Look, Beasley might one day be better than Gary Harris. As a pure shooter, he might already be better. But there's so much more to the game, and I think Malik Beasley is as great as he has been, and he's going to be an elite-level reserve here in a couple weeks when Gary Harris returns. Plays like that don't happen with Gary Harris very often. They seem to happen with Malik Beasley way too much. And for all of the good things that he does, getting lost on defense, I don't think there's a single player on the Nuggets roster that causes Michael Malone's hair to gray more than Malik Beasley, because plays like that, and again, it's the fault of both him and Mason Plumlee. The communication goes two ways, so they both should have been talking there. But Malik Beasley is sort of the one constant. He's always involved in those types of plays, and those ones are killer. So the Nuggets are on a three-game losing streak, and it sucks. It sucks because they had a pretty good cushion in the standings. You looked at it and you thought, okay, you maintain this more or less. You got a lot of wiggle room between you and the 3 seed, a lot of wiggle room between you and the 4-5 seed, and then an enormous amount between the 6 seed. And when you look at the 6 seed, I think Denver's still 8 losses up on the 7 seed. So you still look at it and think, okay, only if disaster strikes does Denver fall that far. I still think that they're pretty solid to be like a top 6 seed. But now with the 3-game losing streak, you look at it and go, okay, 1, 2, 3, 4, any of those are almost equally as likely at this point. So Denver's kind of forfeited a little bit there. Now, am I concerned for it? There was some talk today. Will Barton referenced that the team had not a meeting. What he said, I wouldn't call it a players-only meeting, but some people spoke up after that Brooklyn game. We had a talk as a team, and I talked to some of the beat writers. It sounds like the Nuggets locker room was closed for a little bit longer than usual after that Brooklyn game. I think guys were just unhappy with the effort. Guys are fatigued. There's a lot going on, but I think as a team, they looked at themselves and said, hey, we're headed in the wrong direction. Let's turn this around. And that Philadelphia game, I thought, was, it's not a good loss because it was the third in a row, so automatically it can't be a good loss. But just taking in a vacuum, that was a game they fought hard against a very good team, made some mistakes. They should have won, but you look at it and go, okay, that's a good team you just lost to. So that one wasn't so bad. I think Denver probably on the right track. And talking to, Jokic and Barton and Malone today, the vibe and the sense I got from them out of practice, at least, was, and I'm going to sound like Vance Joseph here, we're talking about the Broncos, it sounds like they had a good practice and that everybody was on the right page. It wasn't like there was this nervousness or anxiety or anything. It's felt like everybody kind of knows, okay, it's time to get these 2 wins before the break, focus just on these 2 games and get these things done, and then we'll regroup after the All-Star break, which is what they need. So my level of concern, 10 being the highest, 1 being the lowest, is probably somewhere around a 2 or 3. I just think this team needs to get healthy. At some point, we knew these injuries were going to pile up. And, if they continue after the All-Star break, I think Denver's in a really tight spot. But if they can get healthy, then I think this will just be one of those blips we don't even remember. It just kind of becomes a footnote in the larger story that is this season. So the next 2 games will probably reveal a lot, but more than anything, after the All-Star break will reveal even more. Miami, a team that's played tonight in Golden State. I'm sorry, tonight is in Sunday night in Golden State, and then flying on a back-to-back to Denver. That's one of the toughest back-to-backs you can do in the NBA. In fact, the NBA eliminated the Portland to Denver back-to-back. I believe they eliminated that one. They were no longer going to allow teams to do that because the record for teams doing that was, like, abysmal. Well, this is sort of like that. It's not that much different. You lose an hour going west to east. You play late because it's the West Coast, and then you fly into Denver. So Denver is a 10-point favorite against Miami, and it's not just because they're the better team. It's also because Denver had 2 days off. Miami has zero. That's a huge, huge bonus. So I think Denver can get back on track. And then, of course, Sacramento, a very good team who's playing well right now, trying to get in a playoff spot. That one will be much more difficult, but you're looking at the last game before an All-Star break. You hope the team can buckle down and get that one. Let's talk about the trade deadline. Denver did not make a move. They are one of, I think, like five or six teams that has not made a trade at all at any point this season, no matter how large or minor. Kind of surprised by that, but not really. If you listen to the show right before the deadline, I talked about, I think there was a 35% chance. I mean, I just made that number up, but a 35% chance that Denver would make a deal. They elected to stay pat, and, you know, I didn't think Denver would make any type of big deal. I thought Trey Lyles, Tyler Lydon, you might look at one of those guys and say, okay, can we get something for Trey Lyles before we lose him? Is he that important to the team? I think Denver probably decided, yeah, we'd rather just keep him, and if we lose him this summer, you know, what could we have really gotten? It wouldn't have been that much, that important. And then Tyler Lydon, you know, maybe opened up a roster spot for somebody else that they had eyes on, but that was not the case. So he stayed on the roster. So a little bit surprised. But, you know, no big trades or anything like that. It was not a surprise. The Clippers, they have a plan in place now. It's very clear. And there's been rumors about this for a while that the Clippers don't see themselves as, you know, the Clippers traditional. They're new Clippers. They have a new owner. They have a new general manager. They've got a new brand, all this stuff, and they're ready to try to throw their hat in the ring to become a serious contender. They have Los Angeles behind them, the city of Los Angeles. Not necessarily the fan base, but they have the city, which is a very attractive thing. One of the most attractive assets in all of the NBA, if we're just talking about for recruiting purposes. So they want to go after Kawhi Leonard is the name that's been attached all year. It sounds like it's almost an open secret that that's where he is going to go next year, almost no matter what. So you think, okay, the Clippers are going to get better, but even though they're going to probably try to miss out on the playoffs this year, and then they're going to try to get somebody else. Now, what was interesting about their trade of Tobias Harris is they picked up enough assets to make a move on Anthony Davis this summer. They are going to have a lot of draft picks, including a couple really, really high draft picks. I think Miami's draft pick in 2021, Miami does not appear to be a team that's headed in any, you know, great direction. So 2021 could be a great draft pick that they pick up. That they could include in a trade to New Orleans. So if I'm New Orleans, the reason I don't like that Lakers package is because you already get players who have been in the league for 3 or 4 years. You have to start paying them. They're not like super young prospects. They're medium young, and they're all kind of mediocre. So you end up getting, you know, a roster that is not the worst in the NBA, so you don't get the number one draft pick, but it's also not a roster that has a ton of upside. So to me, I would rather take a bunch of picks, because a pick could turn into anything. It could turn into a trade asset. It could turn into a lottery pick. You can kind of identify the players you want to fit your roster. So I think the Clippers now have a trade package that can rival a lot of people's. And then the other thing is, the Clippers, if they made the playoffs this year, their pick went to Boston. And Boston, that was one of the picks Boston was counting on this summer to offer Anthony Davis and say, hey, here, you can have the Clippers pick. It's number 15 or whatever. So in one swoop, they put themselves in position to sign two max players this summer or trade for Anthony Davis and hurt the Clippers or the Celtics offer, which is probably one of the biggest contenders. So the Clippers, I say all this because this pertains to Denver. The Clippers are a team that are poised to create a super team this summer, and I would not bet against them. They have this the location, they have the slots, they have a good coach, good manager. They might be one. The Lakers clearly also have that same plan to try to pair Anthony Davis and LeBron. It did not work out from this time, and that means that the Lakers are going to have to fight just to get into the playoffs. And then, you know, they're going to have this roster that they have, which is, look, LeBron is good enough to make this team competitive, but their plan clearly is to try to make a move this summer. So it's something to keep an eye on, because Denver's window for contention probably not open this year, but it could open up as early as next year. And you know, you look at the landscape and say, okay, who are they going to be playing against? Well, the Warriors, you know, could maintain at least a majority of their core. Steph Curry, certainly. Klay Thompson, probably. Everybody else, you know, we'll see what happens, but there's a lot they can do to sort of rearrange that lineup. Maybe DeMarcus Cousins is their third wheel on that. He seemed to have fit in pretty seamlessly so far. So they're gonna be around, but the Lakers, the Clippers, those look like teams that might also be super teams coming up, at least one of them. So that certainly pertains to Denver. Chris Haynes, a very reputable insider around the league, Yahoo Sports, seems to know and be friends with almost everybody in the league. He reported that a lot of these mid-market teams, and he cited Milwaukee and Denver especially, as teams that big time free agents have taken a notice of, that, you know, you look around, you see the Knicks, you see the Lakers, that these superstar players look at those organizations and say, man, I don't know if I want to, I know it's LA, I know it's the Lakers, I know it's the Knicks, they have this brand, I know I can make all this money, but players want to win and they want to go to organizations that don't drive them nuts. And Denver was at least included in the list of teams that allegedly some high-profile free agents have looked at and said, hey, that we're impressed, we're interested, we're keeping an eye on what's going on with Denver. So I say all that to say, and I've said this now for a year, Denver gets into the playoffs, maybe they make a run to the Western Conference Finals, there might be some guys that look around and say, hey, why not Denver? Cool city, cool team, play together, good coach. You know, they might get something going there. We'll have to wait and find out. Isaiah Thomas reportedly coming back soon. The Nuggets had sent him to the 76ers' G League team, or they tried to get him a 5-on-5 workout. Not to play in a game. He was never going to play in games, but he was going to go down to just get in a practice and play 5-on-5. It ended up not working out. But if nothing else, that hints that Isaiah Thomas is going to be back very soon. Now, I am told that he is ruled out for Monday's game against the Heat, but the Sacramento game immediately after that, that would be an interesting game for him to come back for a couple reasons. Number one, Sacramento is where he started his career. He has a connection there. In fact, him and Michael Malone both, I think, hold a little chip on their shoulder about that one. So for him to come back against any game, I think he would like to come back against in that one. But also, it's the final game before the All-Star break, and as much as it would make sense to bring him back right out, if he's healthy, to bring him back right after the All-Star break, giving him one game with like 10 minutes as sort of a token, like soft opening before the grand opening, you know, that would make a lot of sense to me, especially as shorthanded as Denver is. It does not appear as though Gary Harris is going to return before the All-Star break, so it might make sense to bring him back that game. So I think Isaiah Thomas will be back very, very soon. If not that game against Sacramento, then almost certainly right after that. So that'll be a storyline to kind of keep an eye on. You know, and then lastly, Paul Millsap, maybe he's questionable for Monday's game, so that's good. Gary, as I mentioned, not coming back. And then lastly, Nikola Jokic was selected by Team Giannis with so the way it worked out, the starters all get picked first because that's how it has to be, and then you go to the bench. Giannis picked Middleton, his teammate, first, and Jokic second. I was very curious to see where Jokic would go in a draft. LeBron very clearly was taking a lot of free agents and a lot of people he has sort of personal relationships with. But Giannis was interesting because Giannis took Jokic almost right away. And you could argue maybe Jokic was his first choice of bench players, which I just think is really, really neat. I think Jokic is very well respected. He's respected most, I think, by the analytics community and people and nerd fandom, you know, like all the nerds of basketball fans like myself who obsess over the little details of the game. But he's almost equally as respected by other players, both current and former. I mean, Charles Barkley, Isaiah Thomas, Reggie Miller, these guys rave about him. Chauncey Billups, these guys, not just, oh, this is a good player, they rave about how great he is. But even current players, I think he's very, very, very well respected because guys see, oh, not only does he play a style that everybody seems to love, but he does things that are just so, they require so much thought and so much like intuition about basketball. And I think other players more than anyone sort of respect those things. So it was cool to see. Lastly, guys, don't forget this Sunday, it's going to be fun. The live show. I can't wait. It's going to be I'm starting to outline it all week. I'm going to be preparing for it to make sure it's the coolest, you know, sort of event that we do. It's going to be great. Come out, support the show. I'm going to have brand new t-shirts, Locked On Nuggets t-shirts for sale. I'll reveal them at the event. So come out. You might get one. You might win one. It'll be a really, really good time. Realtor Ryan Dykstra, who sponsors this show twice a week, he'll sponsor tomorrow's show. He is helping sponsor that event and making it possible, but it's going to be a great time. Come on out, Society Bar and Grill on Sunday at 4:30. Check the live recording of the show, and then we'll watch the game, the All-Star game together and have a good time. Thanks so much for tuning in, everybody. We'll see you again tomorrow with a recap episode of what is hopefully a win over the Miami Heat.
Thank you for listening to the Locked On Nuggets podcast. Be sure to subscribe on iTunes and visit us on the web at denverstiffs.com.